Now, your giving has been predicated by a successful career with Albemarle and Ethel.
Yes.
And just a quick search, you're listed on 19 patents dating back to 1977. What type of intrinsic values do people need to hold to be able to, you know, to not waver in their approach, to be an inventor?
that's an interesting question. I think to have a certain passion for what you do is important in any area. Of course, I was a youngster then, and I found with age that as I got older, my interest changed. But when you're young and you're thinking, man, I'm going to reinvent the world, you have a certain enthusiasm and a certain passion. And this probably sounds corny, but I really couldn't wait to get to work in the morning because of the things I was working on. Even my sleep, I would dream about, well, I want to do this or do that tomorrow, and you rush in to do it. And every now and then something happens that really turns out very well. And so as an inventor, you have to be driven by a certain enthusiasm, I think, for whatever it is you're doing.
Well, let's talk about a speech that you're going to give this afternoon. It's part of a series called Adventure, Life and Its Experiences.
Yes.
This is a one-hour presentation, and I just wondered, how have you whittled down what must be many great experiences in your life into this a one-hour presentation?
That's a good point. I'm very excited to do this because in my old age and in the world I operate in today, I don't really encounter young folks with all the enthusiasm and all the energy. And so I am really looking forward to it just to participate, and hopefully they'll be a real inspiration to me. As far as how do you whittle down, that's, I guess, been the biggest challenge when you think about it. I've been out in the work world, well, it was 50 years ago. Of course, I've already retired. But how do you relate to a young, enthusiastic person 20 years old today what I encountered 50 years ago? And trying to make it worthwhile to them has been the challenge. I don't really look at this hour as for my benefit per se. If I don't do something or say something that some way is beneficial to them, it's kind of a waste of time from their side. So I've tried to identify some principles, some practices, some guy, and I'm going to start off this afternoon by telling them to kind of be patient because they're going to hear what will sound like some platitudes on my part. But they really have worked for me in my 50 years, and at least I want to share them with them. And if they consider they're nothing more but platitudes, then, well, that's their choice, of course. But I think the biggest challenge has been not the scientific part, but it's the people part.
And what do you mean by the challenge of working through the interactions with people? Can you kind of flesh that
out
a little bit more?
Well, I think one of the most important things you can realize early on that you'll never get everything you want. It will always be a compromise. And usually it's a give and take. And if you can learn early on in your dealings that you're going to have to give up some things, but you can expect the other person to do that too, to deal with you in good faith, I think you'll go a long way. And I don't know, maybe when you're young and energetic and naive when you first get out of school, which maybe folks today are not, but I certainly was, you go out expecting, hey, I know everything, I know how the world should be. But it doesn't take very long for the bumps and bruises to start changing your outlook. And so compromise and how to manage compromise, I think, is one of the important things that we need to learn.
Let's talk a bit about your support of the educational system. So 50 years ago, there were obviously changes going on, whether it was technological, industrial, the chemical golden age.
Right.
And so now you look at a change in the educational system where, you know, you see that maybe the way the classroom is flipped, more technology used within the classroom. Do you think that the changes that are happening now are as massive as they are perceived due to maybe a lack of institutional memory?
Yeah, I think just looking at the world, I think technology and change is accelerating. And so just from that context, it seems to me that changes that are facing educational institutions are pretty dramatic, because the product of educational institutions, of course, are the students who come out. And still, all of us who go through the educational process are looking for, well, how am I going to make a living when I get out of here? And so I think if we don't make massive changes to keep up with the technology, I think we don't prepare our students for the world that they're going to face. And in part of what I'll be relating today or mentioning in the seminar is just how that has changed over my lifetime. It's amazing how much more efficient we are as a society now versus 50 years ago. Of course, I'm an old man now. For a young fellow like you, you probably maybe don't even realize it. But just as an example, you know, we pull in the day, we fill up our car with gasoline, we stick a card in the slot, and we fill it up, and we're gone. When I was a youngster, and when my daddy would pull into a gasoline station, three people would come out to service your car. And one would put the gas in, one would clean the windshield, one would look under the hood. That doesn't happen today. So there are three jobs that have just vanished. And I can go just down the list of, we do things so much more efficiently today. And if our students and if our classrooms don't offer the very latest in technology, because the real world is going to find the very cheapest way to do something. And money is always the behind-the-scenes driver. And so if our students are not prepared to use technology so that they can compete and offer whoever is paying their bill the most economic, efficient way to do that, then they're going to be at a disadvantage.
But then you have the national conversation and the push to have more college graduates, but you also maintain the quality of a college education. Where do you draw your balance on efficiency, competitiveness, but maintain your product quality?
That, too, is a very timely question. I had breakfast this morning with Dean Murray from the Library Group, and we talked about the initiative even here at Murray about quality and I don't think is any silver bullet, Chad, that answers that question per se, but you have to depend on the skill and the ability of the person who is making those decisions to know, if I do this, is the payoff worth the cost, and do I damage too much my product so that it now falls out of competition and I let someone else get my goodie, so to speak. And so it's a constant struggle. I don't really have any one guideline to tell you that it'll always work, but you have to have the person in place who has the appreciation of that balance and always keep it in mind, because people perceive very quickly, people being customers, if you do something that cheapens what they are wanting to buy. And the marketplace is very harsh. It doesn't really give you too many opportunities to make mistakes. If you make one or two, you can be outside looking in, so to speak.
Well, Dr. Jesse Jones, thank you so much for your time today.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Dr. Jesse D. Jones is, again, one of the most generous donors in the history of Murray State University. And he gives a presentation on his life and experiences this afternoon from 2:30 to 3:30 in the Friedkurt Auditorium in the Collins Center for Industry and Technology here on Murray State's campus.